So the title of this lecture is Financial Markets and Instruments. It always occurs to me when I start this lecture that I should change the title of this lecture. I really should label it Financial Markets, Instruments and Participants, because we should also say something about who is it that is engaged in trading activities, buying and selling in the markets. I'm not assuming that, to begin with, at this stage in the course, I'm not assuming you know anything about financial markets. So maybe I should start with a question. Why are there financial markets? The financial markets play a key role in bringing together sources of funds with individuals or organisations who need those funds. Those organisations could be governments or agencies acting on behalf of governments, or they could be companies, corporations if you like. And if I can remind you, in this module, what we will be thinking about chiefly are companies that have shareholders. In the UK we call them publicly limited companies, or PLCs. In the US they're typically referred to as corporations. Don't laugh. But the financial markets have a key role as a dating agency. They bring together potential lovers. Institutions or individuals with surplus cash, surplus funds, looking for the best home, the best investment home for that cash, for those funds, and other individuals or institutions or organisations who need those funds for typically capital investment purposes, e.g., if it's a company. The financial markets play a key role because the companies that need the funding don't have to go off in search of the sources of funds. They can raise the funds through the capital markets. The capital markets bring the two sides of the story together, and it's in that sense that they act as a dating agency. Of course, you already know from my introductory lecture that the financial markets are not the only source of funding. The banks are another very important source of debt capital. They make loans to companies. So why am I bothering to dedicate Lecture 3 to the financial markets? Well, Lecture 3 is particularly relevant in recent times given the credit crisis, given the reluctance of banks to lend capital to corporations. Where do you imagine those companies are going to go if they need capital for investment purposes and their banks are being very tight-fisted about it? The answer is, the only other place to go are the financial markets. So we had better understand how the financial markets work. Let me introduce you to some jargon. Primary versus secondary markets. Again, try not to laugh. In the primary market, the baby is born. We might be talking about shares in a company. Shares that are issued for the first time. That's new equity. We might be talking about a loan that is created for the first time. Both represent new forms of capital, and new forms of capital are introduced through the primary market. The usual term for this is origination. So you might come across the phrase equity, or more likely debt origination. When fresh capital is being issued, is being raised, that's happening in the primary market. Doesn't matter whether it's equity or debt. But there's also a secondary market. What's the difference? The secondary market involves the trading, that's the buying and selling, of existing capital. Second-hand shares or debt, if you like. The equity or debt is not being introduced in the secondary market. It's already there. What's happening is it's changing hands. Someone is selling it, someone else is buying it. The secondary market is essential for the success of the primary market. Organisations or individuals are going to be very reluctant to put up investment funds if they can't see an easy way to get their money back should their own circumstances or plans change. The secondary market is what enables them to get their money back, hopefully with a decent rate of return. So in order to incentivize the lenders of debt capital or the initial shareholders of equity capital, in order to incentivize them to put the money up in the first place, they have to be reassured there is an exit clause. You could always sell your shares or your ownership of bonds, which is the typical form of debt capital. You can always sell it on to someone else at a later date if you change your mind, if you change your plans. That selling on is happening in the secondary market. We need a secondary market with a high level of trading. Here's another piece of jargon. We need the secondary market to be highly liquid. Liquidity is the term we use to measure how easy is it to turn cash into paper securities like shares and bonds, and vice versa. The more liquid is the market, the easier it is to do that. And the way that typically shows up in practice is in terms of what's called the spread between the price at which you can buy and the price at which you can sell the same asset. They are not the same. You want to go on holiday? You want to buy some foreign currency? You have to pay a particular exchange rate. Your plans have changed dramatically. You're not going after all. You'd like to sell the currency back. You won't get the same exchange rate. The Bureau de Change will keep a piece back. That's how it makes its money. And that's how it works in the financial markets. There are important players in the financial markets called market makers. Their job is to post firm prices at which they're prepared to buy or sell particular financial assets. They're not the same price. What they're prepared to pay when they're on the buying side is always less than what they're prepared to sell at. And the difference between the buying price and the selling price is called the spread. The more liquid is the financial market, the tighter is the spread. It's not so big. Why is that? Because there are other market makers as well, and the situation is highly competitive. And any market maker that has an uncompetitive spread very quickly goes out of business. So a highly active secondary market is crucial. It's a necessary condition for a successful primary market. And we need the primary market in order for the funds to be put up in the first place, be they in the form of equity or in the form of debt. In truth, I've never really updated my own thinking, which just shows what a slow learner I am. Because I learned about the financial markets not from reading the textbooks or by studying academic papers in the research literature. I learned about the financial markets by standing there right at the edge of the trading pit when I used to work for UBS. You might notice that I generally, hope I'm not tempting fate, I generally don't trip here. And that's because I was trained by the various markets that I used to spend a lot of time on. Don't even think of crossing that line with your feet. You are not an authorized trader. Don't so much as put a toe into that trading pit, or you're out the building, chum. So my knowledge of the financial markets has largely been gleaned from what I used to observe in the mid-90s. And in the mid-90s, not in the cash markets, where investors would typically invest in equities or possibly bonds, but in a different type of financial market called the derivatives market, which is essentially what I was studying, most of the trading basically was carried out by a process called open outcry. So you had men, a few women, in very colourful jackets, shouting at each other all of the time. And what they were shouting at each other all of the time were the prices at which they were willing to buy or sell particular assets for which they had responsibility, and the quantities that they would be willing to buy or sell at these prices. And that's how the trading came about. These participants, these market makers, found partners by identifying someone on the other side of the trade who was willing to close the deal. I still think about the markets as functioning like that, but the truth is they don't. Because almost all of the major financial markets, certainly the cash markets that involve equities or bonds, and almost all of the derivatives markets, have now moved over onto what's called screen-based or electronic trading. Very few men in colourful jackets shouting and screaming at each other now in this enclosed area called the trading pit. Almost everyone sitting with their faces glued at the screens studying how the prices are changing. So that's an important development, and I'll say more about that in the weeks to come. Some more jargon. Let's distinguish between the money markets and the capital markets, and it's really easy. There you have it. I'm holding my arm up, and my arm represents this vertical dividing line. And that vertical dividing line is 1 year. And that's the difference between the money markets and the capital markets. Whatever the investment is, whatever the particular traded security is, if, when it's introduced for the first time, it has a lifespan of less than 1 year, it trades in the money markets. If, when it's introduced for the first time, it has a life of more than 1 year, and in the case of shares in listed companies, in principle, those shares can live forever. If the lifespan at the point of birth is greater than 1 year, those securities are traded in the capital markets. So that's the difference between money markets and capital markets. I've listed some examples of both. I don't really need you to know very much at all. What do I need you to know? I'd like you to know that there are a number of different forms of what I'll call short-term debt. Short-term meaning less than 1 year. So that's a form of lending capital. Who's doing the borrowing? Could be a government, could be an organisation, a company. There are also medium-term. What do I mean by medium-term? Typically going out perhaps as much as 5 years, or long-term debt capital. What do I mean by long-term? Typically stretching out 20 or 30 years. Indeed, the government, the UK government, not so long ago, issued a bond that had a 50-year lifetime. So 20 to 30 years, that's the long-term. These are examples of debt capital. Equity, which is a quite distinct form of capital, is also long-term and therefore trades in the capital markets. So now you know, for example, that the stock market is an example of a capital market. How is the trading conducted? Depends. Depends which market you're looking at, and depends which securities that are being traded in that market that you're looking at. The two chief types of market mechanism: one, quote-driven systems. And in a quote-driven system, which is what I basically explained earlier, there are key players called market makers. Market makers provide liquidity. That's what they're on this planet to do. They don't do it out of the goodness of their heart. They do it in order to make money. And the money they make is by capturing the spread, the difference between the buying and selling prices. That's how that type of market works. How do I distinguish that so-called quote-driven system from an order-driven system? An order-driven system is a bit like an auction. The price is discovered, formed in the jargon, by matching the supply, the number of units in a particular security, with the demand for that security. The price that emerges is whatever brings aggregate supply into line with aggregate demand. I've listed on the screen the most important examples, the most common examples of quote-driven systems and order-driven systems. Do you notice that the London Stock Exchange is both? It depends what you're talking about. If you're looking at the London Stock Exchange, before October 1997, it was all quote-driven system. But then they changed the market mechanism as far as the largest 100 stocks, the so-called FTSE 100 stocks. They are now traded according to an order-driven system. The smaller capitalisation stocks that trade in London are still traded according to a quote-driven system. Just to make life even more interesting, the largest stock market of all, the New York Stock Exchange, is neither. It's a mix of both. It's a hybrid market. Some securities are traded according to a quote-driven system, whereas other securities are traded according to an order-driven system. If you want to find out more, this is what you do. You identify the stock market that you're interested in. Is it the London Stock Exchange? Is it the New York Stock Exchange? Is it NASDAQ, the North American Security Dealers Automated Quotation System? That's basically where the big high-tech companies, their shares, Microsoft, Sun, etc., that's where those shares are traded. If you want to know what is the major trading mechanism in a particular stock exchange, you go to the website of that stock exchange and you just start to drill down. They will tell you in glorious detail about their particular market mechanism. I don't need you to know any of that for the purposes of this module, but if you are genuinely interested in finance, and in particular financial markets, you might want to spend a few minutes doing that. I've already said something about equity versus debt, the key characteristics and the key distinctions. So I'm going to leave you to read the information that's on this slide about equity and the information that's on the following slide about debt. Pretty much covered all of those points in an earlier lecture. Look in particular at the summary that I've written of the first lecture. If that doesn't satisfy, wait until we revisit the topic of company financing in week 5, because I'll have more to say about it then. I'd like you to look with some scrutiny at the next slide. In particular, I'd like you to look at the very bottom line. The numbers are a bit out of date. That was a bit sloppy of me. Actually, sloppy is a bit unfair. I was determined to get all of the materials printed off before the start of term. I didn't have time to update this particular slide, or indeed a couple of slides that follow. So I've uploaded onto my.wbs the new numbers, because we can do better. The table that I have on the screen is more up to date than the table in your handout. You don't need to furiously write down the numbers, because for a start, I'm never going to ask you to recite any of the numbers, but there's a copy of this slide waiting for you on my.wbs. Just spend a moment looking at it. Just quickly persuade yourself that the largest stock markets are pretty much where you would expect them to be. In the US, in the UK, in Japan, in mainland Europe. But there's something wrong about this slide. There's something missing. Can you work out what it is? Is there a particular country that in recent years has stolen a march on the big players, the US and Japan, that perhaps should be there on the table? Is that country China? You can find out for yourselves. See if you can work out how to change the table by bringing China into the story. Let's say a few words about stock market indices. That's useful to us because at the tail end of the last lecture, which I just finished off this morning, I mentioned the idea of investing in the market as a whole. Is it actually possible to do that? You can't buy units in a market. It doesn't work that way. They're not traded. What you can do, however, is invest in units of a portfolio that seeks to track the market. What is it that measures the market then? Is it doing well? Is it not doing so well? The answer is an index. So each of the major stock markets will have any number of stock market indices. For example, the FTSE 100. The FTSE 100 is made up out of the 100 largest stocks by market capitalization that trade on the London Stock Exchange. What do I mean by market capitalization? I mean the market value of the firm's equity. Well, thanks, Peter, that's really clear. I still don't know what you mean. It means the number you get by taking the number of shares and multiplying by the share price. That's the market capitalization of a listed firm. What's the current share price? How many shares are there in total? Multiply the two together, and there's your market capitalization. Incidentally, that's also the market value of the firm's equity. How could we form these indices? Well, there's more than one way. The usual way, and arguably the most useful way, is what's known as a capitalization weighted index. In other words, what should the proportions of each of the securities be in the overall composition of the index? Answer, that should reflect how large is the market capitalization of each firm. Now think about it. If you're forming a portfolio that aims to track the FTSE 100, that's a capitalization weighted index, you might like to bear the following in mind. Far and away the biggest players are the top 10. They are absolutely gigantic in terms of market capitalization relative to the other 90 or so that make up the index. So if you decide to go for a capitalization weighted index, you should pay particular attention to dominant players. Is there any alternative to having a capitalization weighted index? And the answer is a price weighted index. In a price weighted index, the proportions of the different securities that make up the index reflect the current market price. Not the market capitalization, not the product of number of shares times share price, but just share price. And there are some examples of each listed on the slide. What about the world of bonds? Shares was equity, bonds as debt. I could fill a complete lecture talking to you about the different ways in which we can classify debt. And indeed, in a later lecture on company financing, I think I'll have a stab at that. But let's not expose you to too much to begin with. All I'll say at this stage, by way of preview, is there are a number of different ways that we could classify debt, bonds if you like, one of which is by issuer. Who's issuing the bond? The issuer of the bond is the borrower. That's typically the organisation, the company, it could be a government, that needs to raise money in the form of debt capital. How does it do it? It sells a bond, a piece of paper that's valuable, in return for an amount of cash, the bond price, the value of the bond today. So the issuer of the bond is the borrower. The lender is whoever puts up the money. Now, typically, that's some other institution. It may be an investment fund that takes money from large numbers of clients and decides what to do with that money and decides that some of that investment capital should be invested in bonds. It's the bond market that brings them together in the sense of the dating agency. So we could classify bonds by issuer. We could classify bonds by denomination of currency. The money that is paid when the bond is issued, when the bond is purchased, is that in pound sterling? Is that in US dollars? Is that in Japanese yen? So the denomination of the cash flows, the initial price of the bond that's paid, and indeed the coupon interest payments that the borrower pays to the lender, typically at regular intervals, and indeed the principal, the face value of the bond that's returned when the bond matures, is that all in one currency? Is that currency sterling, dollars, whatever? That's another way of classifying debt. What about the location of the market in which the bond is traded, in which the buying and selling goes on? Now, there are other dimensions in which we can classify debt, but we'll put those on hold until a later lecture. So let me just introduce to you three terms. domestic bonds, foreign bonds, and euro bonds. So what's a domestic bond? A domestic bond is issued in the local market. So if we're in the UK, that's in London. This might surprise you. You might think of the London Stock Exchange as simply a market in which shares are traded, issued and traded. But bonds are also traded in the London stock market. Slightly misleading terminology. So perhaps we're looking at a bond that is issued in the UK, in London, by a domestic borrower. So that could be on behalf of the UK government, the so-called debt management agency, or it could be a company that's registered in the UK. And the cash flows associated with that bond are in sterling. So if we're looking at an example, the following example, a bond is issued, let's say, by Barclays Bank. It's issued in London, it's going to trade on the London market, and all of the cash flows associated with that bond are measured in pound sterling. That's an example of a domestic bond, because each of the three dimensions have to do with this country, the UK. The nature of the borrower, the currency in which the cash flows are denominated, and the location in which the trading, the buying and selling of the bond take place. Let's change one dimension now. Let's change the identity of the borrower. Suppose it's not Barclays Bank now, registered in London. Suppose it's a Japanese company. Suppose it's Mitsubishi, raising capital, debt capital, in the London market, denominated in pound sterling. That's an example of a foreign bond. The nationality of the issuer is foreign, Japanese in this case. Everything else is local. The currency is still sterling, and the trading is done still in London, the origination and the changing of hands. Let's change something else now. Let's change the location of the trading. Let's not fix on a market in a particular company. Let's think in terms of an international market. Now, actually, even this international market has a location, because most of the trading I'm about to tell you still goes on in London, but it's thought of as an international market. But specifically now, the currency in which the cash flows are measured, they have to be different from the domestic currency in which the bond is traded. So let's suppose that the trading of this bond is in London, but the currency that the cash flows are measured in are in US dollars. That's an example of what's called a Eurobond. And Eurobonds are big business. Have a look at the numbers in this table. And again, I've updated the table from the version that you've got, and this is now on my.wbs. I've divided up bonds into domestic bonds denominated in each of these major world currencies and international bonds. International bonds include foreign bonds, but by and large, international bonds are made up of Eurobonds. The Eurobond part dominates this international categorization. Just look at the numbers. Just look at how much money is currently locked in to these different forms of bonds, and leave this lecture thinking the bond markets are absolutely crucial for finance.